Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, John Yurkovich in the building. The good kid is back. How much golf you play this week, good kid?
Not enough.
Not enough?
Just a simple answer, yeah, not enough golf. I'll play 27 Saturday, 27 on Sunday. Playing 18 on Tuesday with Carmen again. That's not bad. It's 54, 72 holes in 4 days.
It's not bad.
Not enough. I mean, listen, we only get to play golf in the summer, right?
Yeah. I'm heading out there Sunday.
So, I mean, I started at the end of March, and I will continue probably until the end of October, and that's it. And once the football season starts, the clubs kind of get put away.
Yeah, we got to focus
that's
in.
That's just the way it works.
We got to lock in. There's too much sports going on.
I mean, I'll sneak a round or two in September.
Yeah.
But realistically, except for the weekend. No, trips are done until Scotland next year.
Woo.
So no Pinehurst this year in the fall or in the spring. No Vegas. I went to Vegas the last couple of years, two out of the last three.
Good golf in Vegas?
Yeah, great golf in Vegas, yeah. Man. I tell you, I played some real nice courses out there. The Las Vegas Country Club, they had the live event out there. It's the one they say the plane crashing in Goodfellas. Not, is it Goodfellas? No. Casino.
In Casino, okay.
Casino, yeah, when the airplane lands on
Yeah.
It was filmed out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... you know, that's kind of funny. They actually have an airplane in the water out there.
Do they really? Yeah. Just like to memorialize
in the water, to memorialize it, yeah. So play the line, and that's right by the Sphere. So the Las Vegas Country Club.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sweet. Cascada, I've played out there. I played TPC Summerlin out there. So a bunch of nice courses out there. You get out and find, have a good time out there. And Rio Seco, the Rio's golf course out there, we played too, so. A lot of good golf in Vegas.
There's your weekly golf update with John Yurkovich.
Yeah.
Every week, you don't even, because you don't see the comments as much. People love getting an update on where you're golfing, what's going on with the golf game, how you're shooting. How'd you shoot when you went out with Carmen?
I shot 93 the other day. Carmen shot 89. Jeez. Black shot 89. And our guy, Evan Abdallah, he broke the century mark. He went on top of it, 103. Whew. Yeah, he was on the struggle bus a little bit. But it happens.
I know it.
It happens.
Oh, I'm living on the struggle.
Right.
Here.
So, I mean,
I got nothing good going for me right now.
But my handicap's up to a 15-8. I had an 86 fall off. I got 27 rounds in. They take your last 20 rounds that are played. I had an 86 fall off. That 93 jumped on board, and it raised it like 0.8 tenths of a point. So,
you're moving in the right direction?
No, you know, early in the spring when you played and the ball flew and then it hit and it's plugged.
Yeah.
It's more of an advantage for a bad player to have that happen, and it was all lift, clean, and replace because the ball's plugged. And, you know, you get to basically place the ball where you want,
yeah.
You know, in the vicinity of where you plugged. As an advantage for a bad golfer, that's an advantage for me because the ball can't run out of bounds.
Right.
My balls that are hit off center hit and stop instead of running out of bounds.
Yeah, crazy
things that they do. So the more it dries up, the more difficult life becomes for me. And it's dry and it's not raining. So if I pull a ball and it was plugging before,
it's now gone.
It's going into the out of bounds and I'm hitting three from the tee again.
You're hitting houses. You're hitting houses lately?
No
getting
houses.
Into some yards?
No houses, but in yards. Yeah, you want to stay out of yards. Three from the tee is not a good way to play golf.
No.
Yeah.
No. I've learned it well. I've played a lot more golf since Grip It and Sip It.
Yeah.
I saw somebody go down with an ACL injury playing basketball.
Yeah,
and in my mind, I went, I think I'm done hooping. I can't imagine being 30 and not a pro.
Yeah.
And having to rehab a knee.
An ACL.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at some point, you still got to stay fit physically. You know, you still got to stay fit. It's just the intensity of the games that can get notched down a little bit. I see people getting hurt in paddleball all the time, too.
Yeah.
Paddleball injury. You're 55 and you strained your something or another because you wanted to play paddleball. Congratulations. Hey,
yeah, I think I'm hitting the links.
I'm going to strain myself. I'll strain myself playing golf, getting in out of the cart. Drinking a cocktail, you know. Whoa, man, that was tough. I think I hurt my elbow, you know, putting a drink in my mouth. All right, let's get to the football.
Let's talk some football, good kid. I have a line question for you. There's an offensive lineman that has recently become available and seems like, based on his training staff, he is cleared. I'm talking about Connor Williams, the center last season for the Miami Dolphins. And the reason that I bring his name
up. He had an ACL, though, right?
Had an ACL. The reason I bring his name up is, contract-wise, he was on a little bit of a cheaper deal, made $6 million last year, coming off an ACL injury, could still be on a cheaper deal. Would he be somebody, if you're the Bears brass, that you would look at?
If the Bears bring him in, then they don't believe in what they did already. You know what I'm saying? They don't believe that Bates or the Shelton or whatever they've done in the middle, they don't believe they've done the right thing. So that would be a bad sign for me on what they thought were answers in the middle, and all of a sudden they're not answers in the middle.
Well, here's
– I think you've got your squad.
Okay.
I think you've got your offensive line. I think they're going to make the best of it, and I only think one position is open, and that's the center position. I think your other four positions are taken care of, and then you're going to decide who's backing up where.
Well, the reason for the question is a lot of the question marks around Nate Davis. If Nate Davis weren't the answer, if Matt Eberflus were to decide, listen, dude, you're not on the field, we got to put somebody else there that's going to be out there, I would think the likely answer to that would be Ryan Bates.
That would be a move of arrogance and a move of luxury. That type of move, telling a guy that you signed to that big of a contract, that you don't want, the Bears aren't in that position along the offensive line. So you sign Nate Davis. You're not going to throw Nate Davis under the bus. You're not going to make Ryan Poles look like a fool, are you?
No. I would hope not.
Even though, you know, Nate Davis is doing his best not to want to play football. But they knew he doesn't like to practice. They knew that. He'll find any way he can not to have to play in preseason. Because why? Because that's his nature. But that's not a surprise. Everybody who knew him in Tennessee would probably be able to tell you the same 100%. Thing. 100%. So, yeah, you knew what you were getting with this player. You were hoping that, though, on Sundays he was going to be able to bring the funk. And with the injuries that he's had and his limited time that he spent on the field and his unwillingness, again, now to work, for whatever reason he wants to put out there, sure, that draws a concern. But I think he's still your right guard going into this season. Mm. If he doesn't find a way to get it done this season, I think that's when you move off from him.
Yeah.
But I still think he's the better player and the better right guard of everything that you had that's a choice at the right guard position. So, and now he's got to prove that he's going to be worthy of his contract moving on, because whatever was guaranteed, I have a feeling after the first 2 years will be done.
Yeah, next season, I believe if they let him go, the cap hit is, I want to say, $2 million.
Whatever it is, which it's going to be affordable.
Yeah, it's very affordable. I guess here's my question to you. At what point do you look at, okay, if he is that type of player, doesn't want to practice, wants to be out there on Sunday, at what point do you look at your head coach and say, you got to make a decision, because
after this
you got to have guys in there. You just ride it out with Nate Davis this
year. Yeah, I'm riding it out with Nate Davis this year. Yep.
That'll be interesting to see. That was kind of my reasoning, my thought process on why they might bring in a guy like Coleman Shelton, just because
But Shelton's here, right?
I'm sorry, not Coleman Shelton.
The other guy from Miami.
Connor Williams.
Yeah.
Why they would bring in a guy like Connor Williams, because
not before the season.
No.
Nope. They're going to ride with Nate Davis. Ryan Poles is going to tell Nate Davis, we're counting on you at right guard. You're our man. We want you to get in there. We gave you a lot of money. We know you can play. Now we just want you to get in there and play.
Yeah.
And I think most of the question marks would be, once he's in there, once the season starts, is can he stay healthy?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only question. Can he stay healthy during the season? I think he's a willing participant come Sunday. You know, when all the chips are there and it's all on the line. Yeah. I think he's a willing participant come Sunday. I just think he hates everything about waiting until Sunday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some guys love games. Some guys love playing from noon to three. And then they hate the rest of the crap, because sometimes it is crap.
You've said that about practice and training camp and stuff. When you looked at the big guys, you like, it's pointless.
If I can get out of it, I would. But I didn't have the luxury to be able to get out of it.
Right.
Right now, Nate Davis $10 million
guaranteed.
He's got a little bit of a luxury. But when that luxury disappears, they're going to want him to perform, period.
Yeah.
And if he's not going to be willing to, then they can move on from him, but it won't be this year.
Did you play with anybody like that? That was
Sean Jones hated practicing. Sean Jones, 96, came from the Raiders, hated it, couldn't stand it, thought it was a waste of his time. He's a bright young lad from Northeastern University, he felt all the meetings and all the everything. If you couldn't get it right away, move on from the individual if he can't get it. If he can't get it now, he ain't going to get it. And I think that's the way Sean Jones was. And then we got excused, me, Reggie, and Sean got excused out of meetings all the time. Because they're going over the most basic of fundamental crap.
Yeah.
And Larry Brooks just said, 95, just said, guys, go. You guys don't have to be here for this. And they keep the young guys in the young core and say, okay, let's go over this rudimentary, fundamental stuff. Let's do it again. Over, under, bug, oh, boy.
I love that he's like, well,
I'm happy.
If you're not going to get it,
I'm you happy. Just right. If you're not going to get it, at some point, if you're not getting it now, you're never going to get it. That was Sean's theory. So, yeah, Sean didn't like practice, and Sean had been in the league at that point about 9 years. So,
got a little more power. Like,
he knew what was happening and what was going on. Yeah.
It makes a difference. That does make
a difference. And he was Ron Wolf's guy. So, Greg Blosch, who's our defensive line coach at the time when we first inherited him.
Yeah.
When we got him in, Greg realized that it was Ron's guy. You know, right. He just, hey, just give me some sort of an effort. He goes, you're a smart kid. You know, they both respected each other, so we know you're going to be where you need to be and when you need to be there.
And I think that's the biggest difference, too, is the performance. Right. I could care less of you. It sucks to say, but I really could care less if you're practicing, if on Sunday you perform.
Well, the problem is there's a chance, like, we performed at a high level as a team.
Yeah.
So nobody ever begrudged Sean Jones anything for being kind of a bad practice player. When you struggle and you're a bad practice player, that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
So as long as the Bears don't struggle and the Bears win games and he doesn't struggle on the field, then nobody's going to point the finger. And, you know, but you make yourself an easy scapegoat because of the way you want to practice.
Yeah.
Or your unwillingness to, Brad.
And I think last year, different situation, I guess. I understand that, family issue.
Sure.
Bears should have put that out there. I think they fumbled the ball on that. But I went back to the season before in Tennessee. Nate Davis wasn't exactly all pro. You know what I mean? I looked at his last season in Tennessee. He wasn't exactly, David Bakhtiari when healthy out there. And so I think that's where I look at it. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe practicing would help you in this situation. Maybe working with a new quarterback, new right tackle who, I mean, you didn't spend much time on the field with him. Didn't spend much time on the practice field with him. Maybe working that in would help his game.
But that's your dilemma. Like, so when the Bears had that great line in the early 80s, it was all them guys were supporting each other.
Yes.
Even the backups, Wojciechowski that was there, Kurt Becker, all those guys, and I think I'm a little bit late on Wojciechowski. I think he was here in the early 90s. But like Kurt Beckert and those guys that were backups to all them guys, they're all part of one big familial unit.
Yes.
Stan Humphries might have been on that team back in 85. No, Stan Humphries was a quarterback. What the hell is that kid's name? Either way, it doesn't make a difference. He's a University of Michigan lineman that came in here and was backup. Stephon Humphries. There we go. Stephon Humphries. They were one big happy unit, and they played together, and they played all the time, and they were with each other. And even when they didn't feel good, they were with each other. So you're hoping at some point they become a cohesive unit. And, yeah, the Bears had troubles with stunts sometimes, especially against the Packers.
Yeah.
And the more practice you have together, the more of a feeling you get for when the stunts are happening, and the more that your tackle and your center are in tune – to the communications that need to happen when something crazy is going on. So, yeah, the more you're out there, the better off it is for the whole offense.
Is there ever a situation where you have a guy like Nate Davis who isn't a part of that and the team kind of, as a collective, is like, all right, this guy's the odd man out. Like, but he's not really
not
a part
this
of the
year.
Family.
Not this year.
Right.
That won't happen this year. That'll happen next year.
Yeah.
This year, they're still counting on him. This year, he's still your right guard, period. And it'll be throughout the season. If he disappoints throughout the season, then I guarantee you he won't be here next year.
I can believe that. So, that we'll see what they do.
As long as he doesn't disappoint, he'll be fine.
Let us know in the comments below, man. What are your thoughts on if the Bears were to bring in Connor Williams? Would he be somebody that you're looking at? Do you like where the Bears offensive line is right now? Are you ready to go into the season? Let's now bring in the producer of the Chicago Bears podcast, Eric Ostrowski, in the bottom corner with the question. What'd you call it? The Ask Question Friday?
Yes, yeah. Ask Football Questions Friday.
Ask Football Questions Friday. I love the name of it. EO, what's going on, my guy?
All right, Eric, we're going to stay in the Nate Davis realm that you guys were talking about. And this question is specifically for you. Someone wanted you to role play. You're the pizza delivery. No, I'm kidding. So you are the Bears GM. You're the Bears front office. You sit down with Nate Davis. What are you saying to him right now, if anything?
We paid you. We're dependent upon you. We need you out there during practice to be, you know, become a cohesive unit with your offensive line. You need to be there to set the example for everybody out there. The work's got to happen. To be able to become the best offensive lineman in this team, we've got high expectations for the team, and we got high expectations for you. So let's get about the business of getting our work done. We've got 6-7 weeks till the start of the regular season. We want to put ourselves in the best possible position as we move forward, and that involves you being on the field. And now I might even tell them, I go, look, this is what we expect. The hard days, we expect you there, and then we'll give you a break. Once a week, we'll give you a break if that's what you need. Know when it's coming. It'll be this specific day, and that's it. But we need you there for the tough working days.
Mm. That's smart. It's like, bust your ass for us on these days. We're going to recognize.
Well, just so you get prepared. Yeah. You got to prepare. You got to prepare in the preseason. You can't Cadillac it through the preseason because it's going to cost you in the regular season.
That's what you did last year.
All right, so this listener was said that it feels like Tyson Bagent is going to be our backup quarterback.
Right. Yep.
Are you guys okay with that?
Yep, yeah. 2-2-4. It's fine. 2-2-4. Your backup quarterback shouldn't be used more than 4 games anyway. If it's a catastrophic injury, you can go ahead and just blow the season up anyway to Caleb Williams, and then you're worried about his future. So, yeah, if Tyler Bagent is the backup quarterback, he was 2-2. So I'm fine with that. And I think he'll be better than he was last year.
No, 100%. I like the fact that Tyson comes in with confidence. He doesn't shy away from the pressure that came to him. He was ready for the moment in his rookie season. You know what I mean? And he's still trying to prove that I'm not just a backup in this league. So he's going to give you his best foot forward when he gets out there. I love the fact that we brought Tyson Bagent back as our backup.
All right. And then this is a follow-up this person had. So, if you're going into a week game this week and you know your backup's starting, does the rest of the locker room press a little bit more? Are they a little more, all right, I got to do my job a little bit more? Is this mindset change in the locker room?
No, I mean, there's just a recognition of the fact of who your quarterback's going to be. When we didn't have Mark Brunell in Jacksonville, we knew it was going to be Jamie Martin. And then when Mark Brunell and Jamie Martin got hurt, then we had Jonathan Quinn. And then it was like, we're going to be up against it. He's a rookie quarterback, and we're going against the Vikings, and we're going to be up there. It's going to be a night game. It's going to be featured everywhere, and we're going to lose 52-10.
Lose 52-10?
Oh, yep, you bet your sweet ass. Randy Moss had 3 touchdowns. It was 1998. I remember it well. Second game, we played Pittsburgh the next Monday night. I think back when they were still playing Monday nights in the final week of the season, we came back and we beat Pittsburgh on that Monday night. But, yeah, couldn't complete a ball to a wide receiver. Freddie Taylor was, I think, our leading receiver with maybe Pete Mitchell or Derek Brown. They were our leading receivers. Maybe we completed 7 balls all day, 7 of 25, and at the end we just started handing the ball. We gave up 17 points. We had a interception return for a touchdown, interception return to the 3-yard line, and an interception return to like the 9. And we gave up 17 points, you know.
Good defensive day. Great defensive day.
For them. Great defensive day for the Minnesota Vikings. Not a great defensive day for us. That's how it got to 52.
Oh. You gave up. Okay, so yeah, you threw them.
We threw three interceptions.
Okay.
They returned 1 for a touchdown, 1 to the 3-yard line, 1 to the 9-yard line. And we gave up a touchdown in the field goal, and they had already scored a touchdown. So it went from being a not-so-competitive game to a blowout real quick.
It's ugly.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so
I'd say 52-10. It might have been 48-10, something like that.
It was not a good day, though.
No.
It was not a good day.
No.
It don't matter.
When any sacks that day for you? Any? No. You get any? No
sacks, couple TFLs, but no sacks. No.
This fan wants to know, what do you think will be the one skill that Caleb relies on, i.e. ball accuracy, arm strength, ball security, those sorts of things? What do you think will be his one solid trait?
I hope it's going to be his ability to read the defense.
Yeah.
Because that'll be the biggest difference for him than it was for Justin Fields. His ability to read and recognize. And if that is his greatest strength that we're going to have, because Justin had a strong arm. Justin could run. Justin was athletic as hell. Against man-to-man, Justin was willing to put the ball anywhere. But his ability to read and react is if that happens and that's his greatest strength, then the Bears are going to be okay at quarterback for 10 to 12 years.
Yeah. The one thing that I looked at with Caleb that continues to be praised by all the wide receivers on this team is the anticipatory throws. If you can read the defense and get that ball there on time, I agree with Yerk. Like that's going to be the biggest asset.
Remember, though, doing it in one-on-one and doing it in seven-on-seven and doing it with the rush on you, there's two different animals.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't wait to see it all in training camp, but until he starts doing it in games, that's the deal maker. That's the difference maker. So I'm going to be happy if it's all going great and everybody's happy and everybody's jumping for joy, but I'll really be happy if I see it during games.
100%. I'm with you.
All right. So this one listener wants to know, how or will Tyler Scott have any role at all on this offense?
Sure. He'll have a role. I mean, first of all, not everybody stays healthy all year.
Yeah.
Tyler Scott is a speed demon. You're going to play some four wide receiver sets every once in a while. So I think in some four wide receiver sets, you're going to see Tyler Scott out on the field. His biggest bugaboo to me last year was an inability to catch the ball with his feet on the ground. Just wanting to jump for no reason at all.
Yeah.
You don't have to jump to bring it back to your chest level. You put your hands up, you snag the ball, you bring it back down, you get 2 feet in, you score yourself some touchdowns. So that was his biggest weakness. Hopefully they worked on it. But no, there's a chance that he can get a role in there. And if somebody gets banged up, guess what? He's going to have a real role.
And I think the thing too is, to me, we watched Tyler Scott last year. Footwork off the line was phenomenal. Being able to create separation was phenomenal. Had no ability to track the football in the air. How many balls were deep balls thrown to him that it was just like, if you just bring it in, you're walking into the end zone. Like if he can improve at all upon tracking the football in the air, he's still a deep ball threat. Now he's a deep ball threat on a team with three other threats that people are much more focused on. So I do think he can have a role, but it's going to depend on him.
Yeah, but the dilemma is if you're the fourth option or the fifth option, you're hardly ever going to be gotten to. I mean, it's got to be a play where sometimes they come out, they're going to clear everything, and they're going to try to work him underneath.
Yeah.
And that's where he's going to have to make his impact.
When you were playing, like earlier in your career, this is me just following up. So, like, as you guys talked about, Tyler Scott has these skills, but he lacks tracking the ball in the air. Was there something in your career that, like, I know that I struggle at this. I need to focus on this. How do I get better at this?
I couldn't rush the passer. I didn't have any pass rush moves. I'd go to the toolbox to look at a pass rush move, and the only thing I had was a sledgehammer. So, my rip, I wasn't tall enough to kind of get up under an arm and lift the guy off to kind of take him out of his thing. So a rip really never was utilized for me unless it was a rip and the guy sat and I came back over the top with it. So my pass rush was always a problem, but I played against the run. I played the run well. So, boom, ultimately why I left Green Bay was they needed to find a better pass rusher. So they moved Gilbert from three to nose, and they moved Santana Dotson in there, who they picked up in free agency. And guess what? Gilbert was a much better nose than I was, and Santana was a much better three technique than Gilbert was. So they made an improvement. That defense, I think, was number two or three in the NFL that year, in 96, going into the Super Bowl in January 97. So, those moves that they had worked out for them perfectly. But the ability to play against the run and, for me, not make mistakes.
Yeah.
When I was in Cleveland, we did about a 10-game session where we went and took a look at mental errors that everybody had. And we had, like, Hervin McCormick. We had Derek Alexander from Minnesota. We had Roy Barker came in from San Francisco in the year that they had that draft, the expansion draft. So we had a bunch of guys from everywhere, Chris Mualanga, Mike Thompson. They're going around the room. This guy's got 27 mental errors. This Darius Holland was with me, Jerry Ball.
It was a who's who up there.
It was 27, 25, 24, 22. Yurko mental errors one. And Clarence Brooks was the coach. And Hervin or somebody said in the back, hey, how come Yurko's only got one mental error? And then he stopped it and he said, listen, look at him. He goes, he's played in this league for 10 years. He goes, he don't look like much. He goes, but when I go to bed, I feel good because I know he's going to be out on that field and I know he's not going to fuck up.
Yeah.
He goes, well, you guys, I worry about you guys fucking up all the time. He goes, and in the NFL, if you beat yourself, from the get-go, the other team doesn't have to do a goddamn thing. Not one fucking thing right. One guy screws it up on the defense, and all of a sudden there's a chasm and there's a hole there.
Yeah.
And if they take advantage of him, we're all going to look like fucking idiots. So one guy is going to make everybody look like a fucking idiot. He goes, what you're calling, I know that he's never going to be that idiot. He goes, I'm worried about you guys being those fucking idiots. Clarence was smart enough to get the hell out of there. He went and moved to some other team after Cleveland. He knew it was going to be a rebuild that was going to take time. And it's the one thing in 99 when Cleveland came back, when Carolina and Jacksonville came in the league, they gave him a first-round pick at the top. They gave him one at the end of each round. Second at the top, second-round pick. So they were allowed to get flush with 14 draft picks in that first year.
Ooh.
And 14 draft choices. With Cleveland, they didn't do that. They didn't give him the first pick and the 33rd pick. You know, the 34th pick. They would have been 1, 33, 34.
Oh, they got the
and
double.
And then at the ass end. You know what I'm saying? So they didn't do that for him that year. And
so you're not doing – that wasn't snake
that
draft.
That would have been 33 and 65.
Yeah.
And they would have had 66 and then the back end of there. Yeah. 97.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
You know what I'm saying?
That makes a difference.
It made a huge difference. And that's why they struggled while all of a sudden Carolina and Jacksonville was in the AFC and NFC championship games, right, respectfully, quick, in their second year. So just an interesting little side.
That
note,
is
they
interesting.
They made that little minor adjustment where they gave it. They basically put it to Cleveland. So.
That's nuts.
That is. Yeah. That makes a big difference. All right. Heading into camp. I think we all agree that the best two position groups on the team are going to be competing in camp in the wide receivers and the DBs.
Yep. Sure.
Which group do you like the most?
The DBs. I think the DB unit is the best DB unit in the NFL. I think that what we saw last season, now they're going to need more pressure, right? They're going to need sacks this season. But I think that as far as coverage, as far as what we saw improvement-wise, how Tyreek Stevenson got himself together by the end of the year, I think that this is one of the best DB units, and you get Kevin Byard onto this team where, yeah, he struggled last season, but he went to Philly. That was a nightmare. He was in Tennessee before that. They had zero pass rush to help him at all. I think coming into this team, he's going to have a breath of fresh air, and you get an opportunity defensively to play, have both Jaquan and him switch roles and be able to dominate.
Yeah, I think it's an unfair question. And the reason is because you're playing six defensive backs when they're at their best, and you're going only against three or four wide receivers, a tight end maybe, or a running back, 4-1, 3-1.
Yeah.
I think it's an unfair question because you're involving others in your offensive thing. But I do agree that the defensive backs are probably the strength of this football team, which is what you never want it to be. Mm. You never want your defensive backs to be the strength. You want your lines to be the strength,
yeah,
or your quarterback to be the strength. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So your quarterback or your lines, one of the three of those, has got to be a strength of your football team. I always say you build your team backwards when you do that. When you build your team and the strength is
your DBs,
in the defensive backs, and your strength is your wide receivers, you built your football team backwards. Okay? It's got to be closest to the ball. It's got to be strong as you go out. So fix those two. Fix the offensive defense. And then the further you are from the football, you got to strengthen the most important positions on the team: quarterback, left tackle, wide receiver, shutdown corner. Now, that's different. It makes me sound like I'm a little bit goofy when I say that, right? But those are what you have to have.
Yeah.
You need to have those and your pass rushing defensive end. Those are the five positions you've got to solidify: QB, stud receiver, left tackle, pass rushing defensive end, shutdown corner. You got to have those five, and they got to be the studs on your team. So we don't know what our quarterback's going to be yet. We don't have that stud offensive lineman because he's playing right tackle for you, and he's not playing left tackle for you.
Yeah.
They like Braxton Jones. That's fine. We'll see if he develops a little bit. I like my tackles with asses like Howard Ballard. This guy doesn't have that kind of ass, but we'll see. He's athletic. He's got good feet, and he can play with leverage, maintain his leverage. That'll be fine. So we'll see if that ends up.
How many of the five do you think the Bears have? Shutdown corner, Jalen Johnson, you quantify him as that?
A shutdown corner, you got a pass rusher, Montez Sweat.
Yep.
You don't know anything about your quarterback yet, and you got your stud receiver. You might have two stud receivers, but you only need one.
So three of the five?
I'd say three out of five.
Boy, as a Bears fan, I feel rich with 3 out of 5.
That is a problem. Yeah, you know, you just it just talks about the history, though.
Yeah, you just don't know about the corner, and you know, you don't have your stud offensive line, but I think you've got a offensive line that's in the top half of the NFL.
That's the right direction.
So that's fine, yeah.
Moving in the right direction.
But the one thing they didn't address was the left defensive end, which I think was a big mistake. Rather have a punter, I guess.
That's still nuts. You'd be furious if you saw how good the backup was. The backup punter that they brought in.
It doesn't make a difference what they are.
I was sitting there watching him. I was like, he's kicking just as good as Torrey. I'm not going to lie to you. Not as far.
Well, what's your over-under on punts this year? 17 games. Over-under on punts for the Chicago Bears this year.
What'd they have last year?
Well, I don't know.
What'd they have last year? Give me...
Over under on the amount of punts taken for the Chicago Bears.
56, was it? No, that's too many. What, 3 a game, 17? What 51. Math is that? 51.
That's 51.
I'd say.
So you're going over under 51 in punts.
With this offense, I better be going under.
All right, and how many of those punts will be taken in a position where he's going to be able to impact and make it inside the 5? Of those 51 punts.
I would say
10 punts, maybe 10 where he's got to put it in the coffin corner. 10 he's got to put it in.
I've watched
him
boom at 70 yards.
Of those 10 punts, how many of those will stop inside the 5-yard line?
Give me 5.
So 5 out of 17. That's what you drafted and wasted a 4th-round draft choice for. 5 punts. That's why. Out of 17 games. And it's like one every 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
You drafted him for one punt every 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to make the difference. Minus what the guy did last year. So if the guy last year put 3 inside the 5, I got him for 1 every 8.5 games. I drafted a punter for 1 punt in every 8.5 games. And anybody that wants to tell me that he's going to be worth it, I'm going to say 1 in 8 every 8.5 games. So you crunch down the numbers and you ask yourself, what'd you really get? You got nothing.
Yeah.
You got nothing. So
let's see. Let's hope. Let's hope he's the punt guy.
It's all math.
Let's hope he's the punt guy. That's all we can hope for. Give me 10.
Well, listen,
I wish 10 inside the 5.
I don't even care. I wish him all the success in the world. I want the Bears to win games. So that's all I care about. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get the way he thinks.
Ryan Poles is a little different. It was a little bit different. I'm not going to lie.
And I mean, again, if this football team was 12-5 last year and you want to go draft a punter, I get it. I understand it.
Yeah.
They weren't 12-5. This team had more holes than Mr. Poles thinks he has. More holes for Mr. Poles. I don't think he got it right. We'll see. Hopefully the quarterback bails them out.
Are we still talking about football? More holes for Mr. Poles? Yeah. Are we talking about football?
I'm still talking
about football. Sounds like a title to something there.
Have you ever seen the movie Holes with Shia LaBeouf?
Oh, 100%. I could rap the entire last song.
Well, I don't even know.
Two shoes, two tokens in hand. Yeah. I got no respect because I'm the new man. I got my shovel, shoes full of sand. Check out the tag. The name is Caveman. What?
Is that Kendrick Lamar?
No, that was not Kendrick Lamar. That was Shia LaBeouf. He was rapping back in the day.
Was that Drake?
He was rapping back in the day, Yurk. A-R-M-P-I to the T. What is that smell? Dog, that's me. I don't take showers and I don't brush my teeth. That's all I do is dig holes, eat, and sleep. Come on, Yurk.
I like the other little kid, too, in the movie.
Zero.
They're shy. And then the little Zero. Kid. Yeah.
Hector Zeroni.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're speaking of my childhood here now.
Yeah, holes.
Speaking of my childhood here now.
You know, you couldn't sleep. I'm sitting there. I'm watching. What in the fuck is this movie about? Sigourney Weaver's in it.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm tired of digging Grandpa. John That's Voight. Too dang bad.
John Voight.
Yes. Yes.
John Voight's in that movie, too. Man alive. What the fuck are they talking about?
Oh, what a great time. Hey, we appreciate y'all for all of your questions. Appreciate you tuning in and showing love. Hit that like button. Subscribe to the page. Leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. For the good kid who's got, you got 56 holes of golf coming up this weekend, you said?
54
holes of golf coming up for the good kid. Y'all stay safe out there. I got 18. Peace.